This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Pressing Matters, where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Singapore is one of only three countries so far to have held elections during the pandemic. How has COVID-19 impacted the outcome of the elections? And what do poll results mean for the future of Singapore? Joining us to discuss this is Kirsten Han, a freelance journalist and curator of We the Citizens, a newsletter on Singapore issues. Welcome to the show, Kirsten.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the elections proper, maybe you could tell us about the range of work that you do. You actually wear a lot of different hats.
Yeah, so I report and write commentaries as a freelance journalist, largely for foreign publications, and then I run this newsletter myself for Singaporean and international subscribers. But I also participate in civil society activities in Singapore. So I've campaigned for the abolition of the death penalty, but also tried my best to support other causes such as labor rights for migrant workers and LGBT rights and things like that.
So how does a newsletter like We the Citizens fit into the broader media landscape in Singapore? Is there a gap that you're hoping this newsletter fills in?
Yeah, so originally I started it solely because a lot of people were saying things like there's no such thing as civil society in Singapore, and, you know, there's no such thing as activism, and, you know, Singaporeans only care about bread and butter issues and about money. And so I started this newsletter with a focus on politics, democracy, human rights and social justice, because these are the areas that I cover. These are the areas I feel passionate about, and I wanted to get kind of more attention to these issues. And it kind of developed from there to exploring what I can do with a newsletter as a very direct personal connection with readers. And so I've become very interested in how journalism can be done on this almost kind of one-to-one type communication, like emailing straight to somebody's inbox. I think it fulfills a need for people who are looking for more sources outside of the local mainstream media in Singapore, which is seen as, you know, skewed in one direction. And so I think it kind of feeds this hunger for more takes, more perspectives.
Okay, and let's dive into those elections, which took place on Friday. So the elections were called almost a year before Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong's term was due to end. And a lot of eyebrows were raised because the timing was, after all, smack in the midst of the pandemic. Prime Minister Lee said this was in order for his government to get a strong mandate to make difficult decisions in the face of the COVID-19 fallout. But you've written that you're not quite convinced about this rationale. So why is the timing of the elections problematic?
So, I mean, firstly, it's just dangerous to have, you know, elections in the middle of a pandemic. And even now, Singapore's daily reported cases are in three digits, you know, the lower three digits, but that's still a lot. And, you know, they say that, oh, you know, a lot of these cases are in migrant worker dormitories and not actually circulating among the population outside. But, you know, it's still significant that there are these cases and that, you know, the government and the civil service should be focused on dealing with this situation, not having to campaign and be trained as presiding officers for polling stations and counting centers and things like that. You know, and just the amount of mobilization, even though there were safe distancing guidelines and physical rallies were banned, the amount of mobilization and gathering that came with an election was still increasing the risk. So it was just very contradictory to hear the government say things like, oh, it's not safe enough for us to be able to have social gatherings of more than 10 people, and we need to be very careful and have a phased opening from lockdown, and then at the same time say, okay, now all of you go to a polling station and vote, or, you know, have walkabouts in hawker centers and things like that.
Right. And I suppose it was also the diversion of resources that could have been used to combat COVID-19 instead going to polling processes and systems.
Yes, yes, definitely. And also, like, one of the justifications was, oh, you know, other countries have had elections. And that's true. You know, South Korea did have elections. But the point in Singapore was that we did not need to have the election now. You know, it wouldn't have triggered a constitutional crisis or something to not have an election now. And there was no indication that Singaporeans felt like they didn't already have a strong mandate to deal with the crisis. So the reasoning for why we should have an election at this point in time was already questionable.
So did the pandemic then affect the kind of issues being debated among candidates before the elections?
I think there was a great expectation that it would, because, you know, Singaporeans are rightly worried about the economy and their jobs. And so the PAP's message was very hard on, you know, your jobs and your future. And so these things were talked about quite a lot, but there was also a lot of discussion then about diversity and plurality of opinions in parliament and in politics, and a sense that this could not be detached from the bread and butter issues, really, that to weather this crisis, we do also need to have diversity of opinions and ideas. And one thing that resonated, which the opposition party, particularly the Workers' Party, repeated a lot, was no blank checks, that there shouldn't be a blank check written for the PAP to do whatever they want.
Was that not a point made in prior elections?
Yeah, so that was made previously. The Workers' Party has pushed this in previous elections as well, because, you know, as it stands, no opposition party in Singapore is trying to form government. They're always saying that they just want to be a voice in parliament and add diversity in parliament. And so the Workers' Party has pushed this. You know, in previous elections, they said, you know, elect us to be the co-driver to the PAP. And so they pushed this hard this year as well. And I think that's it's actually, you know, getting traction and it's resonating with more Singaporeans. It's kind of shifted the norm, and now Singaporeans are more open and receptive to the idea that diversity is good and doesn't necessarily mean gridlock in parliament.
This was also the first election where the Protection Against Online Falsehoods and Manipulation Act was in force. So there had been concerns raised that POFMA would be used by the government to their advantage. How do you think POFMA was implemented during this period? Did that concern hold true?
Yeah, so there were quite a lot of POFMA orders issued during the election, considering how short a period it is. It's only 9 days, and then, you know, multiple orders were issued to multiple platforms carrying comments made by opposition politicians. And so, you know, that definitely came true in that POFMA was used during the election, but it seems like it didn't have as much impact, or that Singaporeans saw it for what it was and felt that this was, you know, a political tool that was being used. And so it didn't seem to have that much of an effect that the PAP might have hoped for, because, for example, they used POFMA against two candidates from the Singapore Democratic Party. And even though these two candidates didn't win, their vote margins actually showed the best results for the Singapore Democratic Party in a long time. So it doesn't seem like the POFMA orders or the attempts to characterize them as spreaders of falsehoods or dishonest were resonating as much with voters.
And speaking of voters, you were a polling agent on the day of voting. What were your observations of how the polling was conducted on the day itself?
I think there was a lot of effort to make sure that it would take place as efficiently and safely as possible, but there were things that were not fully kind of accounted for or expected during the planning. So the elections department had claimed prior to the elections that it shouldn't take more than 5 minutes from start to finish, and that was just not possible. I think the idea of having a specific time band where the elderly would show up to vote and hopefully be kept safe from any risk of contracting COVID was a good idea. But then the other effect of having the elderly show up at the beginning of the day, kind of en masse, also slowed down things, because previously they would have showed up throughout the day, and if they needed assistance and more explaining of how things worked, it could be done. But when all of them show up and you have one after another needing assistance, needing explanation, you know, rifling through their bags for their IC, asking, you know, how does this ballot paper work here? It kind of adds up, and it added to the queue. So the polling station that I was at was actually okay. It had a long queue at one point, but it wasn't too bad. But some other polling stations had quite incredible queues. And I think that's why they needed to extend the polling hours by 2 hours.
I'm speaking to Kirsten Han, Singaporean journalist and curator of the newsletter We the Citizens. When we come back, we'll delve into the election results and what this means for the future of Singapore. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. If you've just joined us, I'm Shazana, and you're listening to Pressing Matters. We're dissecting the Singapore elections with Kirsten Han, journalist and curator of the newsletter We the Citizens. So, Kirsten, you wrote about bracing for an opposition wipeout as the worst-case scenario. What do you make of the outcome then, where the ruling party PAP won, but by a smaller majority than hoped for?
So there was a lot of worry from opposition parties of an opposition wipeout. And I think those were, you know, justifiable fears, because going into the election, it seemed like so many things were in the PAP's favor. You know, they got to choose the timing, so they were the only parties that were forewarned. It's a pandemic, which led people to expect that that would be a sort of flight to safety mentality among the voters. The PAP government had just announced 4 consecutive budgets amounting to an eye-watering amount of money to help Singaporeans tide over COVID and deal with the crisis. And then, you know, with no physical rallies, which were previously a big venue for opposition parties to mobilize supporters and fundraise, there was expectation that, oh, you know, the PAP with its bigger resources to do social media marketing and with the mainstream media in favor of the PAP, it would be a big advantage on their end. And so there was a lot of fear that the results in 2015, when we saw 70% of the vote go to the PAP and the opposition just clinging on to their seats by smaller margins than before, there was a fear that this would be extended and there would be basically 100% PAP parliament with no opposition elected. So to see that that didn't happen is a relief for Singaporeans who want a more competitive democracy. And I think the results show that, you know, the flight to safety didn't quite work out in the way the PAP might have expected, and that Singaporeans are now more politically aware, but also have different expectations of their politics. You know, they don't just want stability or the semblance of stability. They also want diversity, and they also want to see politics conducted in a way that's fair.
Could we read something into the fairly slim majority of Deputy Prime Minister and the Prime Minister in waiting, Heng Swee Keat's win in East Coast GRC? I mean, does this indicate a less than enthusiastic support for the future leader of Singapore?
Yeah, so there are kind of two readings. One says that, you know, if he hadn't gone to East Coast GRC to contest, East Coast GRC might have fallen to the Workers' Party. And so his presence defended that GRC for the PAP, whereas the other school of argument says, oh, but the margin is so embarrassingly slim. And I think they actually don't contradict each other. Like, it's true that he probably did help hold on to East Coast GRC for the PAP, but for someone who's supposed to be the Prime Minister in waiting, that should have been expected that he would hold on to the East Coast GRC, and he should have got a bigger majority than that. Such a slim margin is not the strongest position to argue that he should be a future Prime Minister. It doesn't show that Singaporeans are that taken with him. And it was also just very unfortunate that he kind of flubbed his nomination day speech. And because he flubbed that speech throughout the whole campaign, he was just associated with that and memed and mocked for it. And so I think it has kind of damaged his standing an eligibility to be the future prime minister.
Do you think that there will be changes then to the leadership lineup following Prime Minister Lee's retirement, which is projected to be in 2022, if I'm not mistaken? He did say that he would step down then, but do you think the election results change this timeline?
So he said that he was hoping to step down as prime minister when he's 70 years old, which is in about 2 years' time. But the thing is, during the election, there seem to be hints that this might not quite happen in the way that he planned, because this election was supposed to be a strong mandate for a PAP that's having a leadership transition and a strong mandate for the fourth generation of leaders to take the country into the future. But then towards the tail end of the campaign, we have Lee Hsien Loong making a big speech where he reassures Singaporeans that he and two other, you know, heavyweight third generation leaders will continue to stay on to help Singapore through this crisis and only hand over when Singapore is in good shape. So this seems to suggest that it's no longer this 2 year timeline, but it's just whenever, you know, we get over this big hurdle, then they will hand over. And so, I mean, to me, it felt like they wanted to make this reassurance because maybe Singaporeans were not so convinced in the 4G leadership. And so now I think there'll be more speculation about the timeline as to when he's stepping down, and when he does step down, who he's actually going to hand over to.
Okay, help us understand the landscape for the opposition in Singapore. Because earlier you said that the Workers' Party, which is the biggest and most established mm-hmm. opposition party, they don't have plans to actually take over government at this point.
Yeah.
They're the only ones to actually win seats in parliament, but there are at the same time so many other parties who contested in the elections, from the Singapore Democratic Party to the brand new Progress Singapore Party. Why is the opposition in Singapore so fragmented? And I guess, do you think there would be any attempts to consolidate parties in the future to form an alliance that could actually take on the government?
There were talks of forming alliances and coalitions before this election, but they all kind of fizzled out. I think, you know, we have such a fragmented opposition because it has also been very difficult for opposition parties to grow and mature and develop. And actually, it's been, just been difficult for the political scene to grow and mature and develop at all. And we do have a lot of like personal ego problems getting in the way as well. A lot of these smaller parties exist because somebody fell out with somebody else and then went on to establish their own party. But I think that hopefully we will be, you know, a gradual process of consolidation, not necessarily via coalitions or alliances, but just perhaps smaller parties backing out or realigning. And so we might see that some of these smaller parties might perhaps find that the cost of running an election they have no chance of winning might be a bit too high, and then they might dissolve. And perhaps some of their members will go and join some of these bigger parties. But at the same time, it's also positive to see some of the bigger, more established parties develop their own party machinery and infrastructure so that they can organize better, because previously it was just so difficult for them to organize. And when they were struggling with such kind of existential things, it was difficult for them to also think and adopt more progressive and more challenging party positions. And so it's nice to see this maturity now.
And speaking of maturity, I guess it also comes in the form of a lot of new faces within the opposition side. There are a lot of younger leaders in key positions. Does this give an indication of how the future political landscape and discourse in Singapore, could it be different from what it is today, especially in terms of discourse around political and civil liberties?
Yes, I think it could be. I think it might be a bit too early to be making like super optimistic pronouncements about how the future will be different. But I think we have seen in this election the beginnings of an electorate who want to go beyond the old narratives of, you know, be grateful to the PAP for what you have, vote for PAP and stability. You know, you can't trust the opposition, that only the PAP knows how to run your town council and things like that. You know, we are seeing an electorate that wants to go beyond that, who are saying, actually, running the town council well is the bare minimum, and we expect to see more. And with younger voters as well, there's I think we've seen in this election that they are interested in more systemic issues. They're interested in race and inequality and having conversations about that. And so it's encouraging to see, you know, young candidates and new candidates coming out who, you know, won't shy away from saying things like, I'm a feminist, and who won't shy away from saying we should talk about unpaid labor and closing the gender wage gap and things like that.
All right. In the little time that we have about a minute. Very quickly, Kirsten, what should we be looking out for in Singaporean politics, I suppose, in the coming short to medium term?
I mean, in the super short term, Singaporeans particularly will be looking out for the transition, like handing over this new GRC that the Workers' Party has won and making sure that the handover is smooth. Because in 2011, when they handed over a GRC, there were issues with the handover. There were facilities previously overseen by the town council suddenly transferred to like a People's Association statutory board. And so now in this very near future, Singaporeans will be looking out for this handover. But I think in the medium term, we should be looking also at what younger Singaporeans are saying and how they are shifting the norms and expectations of the electorate.
All right. Thank you so much, Kirsten. Thanks for your insight.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Kirsten Han, Singaporean journalist and curator of the newsletter We the Citizens. You can check out her excellent analysis of the Singapore elections and all other issues Singapore at wethecitizens.substack.com. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Coming up next is the 10 a.m. news bulletin, and after that, the good folks over at Enterprise will take you through the rest of the morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.